I'm Hillary McClure, Multimedia Director at Cybercrime Magazine. Welcome to Managing Cyber Risk, a Cybercrime Magazine podcast series brought to you by eSentire, the authority in managed detection and response. Joining me today is Mark Sangster, VP Industry Security Strategy at eSentire, and also joining us today is Tia Hopkins, VP Cyber Risk Advisory and Solutions Architecture at eSentire. Mark, Tia, welcome. It's great to have you both on the show.
Great to be back.
Thank you.
So, Mark, yes, great to be back speaking with you. And as always, my favorite place to start, I think it's quickly becoming your favorite place to start as well. Want to give us a quick intro for this episode?
Yeah, sure thing. So today I want to talk about cyber risk and how we manage it. And that's why, you know, I asked Tia to join us today because she's an expert in that. And she's built out programs and teams around how to do this, you know, the sort of the most effective way. And, you know, as I'm fond of saying, cybersecurity is not an IT problem to solve. Rather, it's a business risk to manage. And yet what I see time and time again is that, you know, companies don't understand this. They don't understand the risks they face. Or if they do, they struggle to identify, you know, the critical assets or the systems that they need to protect. And so, you know, they end up with this kind of like hit and miss hodgepodge soup of cybersecurity where, you know, they're being dragged in various directions and they're kind of, you know, it's just a patchwork rather than something that's strategically based on understanding what the greatest challenges are, what the worst outcomes would look like. And it means they can't align their budgets, right? And their resources to those objectives. So I think it's one of the biggest challenges the companies face because I think it's really the foundation. And that's why I'm excited to hear, you know, Tia's thoughts and initiatives on this.
Yeah, absolutely. Sounds like we've got the perfect guest for this. And Tia, pivoting to you now, we continue to witness security budgets increasing as well as the deployment of new technology. But this approach, it doesn't seem to be stopping the headline grabbing data breaches and severe ransomware outages. So diving in, why doesn't this approach work?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the obvious answer is that the adversaries have access to the same tools and in some cases, more financial resources than we do on the good side of the fight, so to speak. And so, you know, while we are doing our due diligence, you know, conducting proof of concepts and trying to select the right tools or solutions for the job, our adversaries are out there purchasing the same technologies. And the advantage that they have is they just have to find one hole that then gets them in and gives them the ability to pivot to other areas of our environment. So a lot of times, once we've, you know, purchased and implemented these solutions, in some cases, our adversaries have discovered vulnerabilities that we don't even know about. So we're kind of starting out behind the eight ball. But I think the other thing that may not be as obvious is, you know, continuing to add tools, it does seem like it solves the problem, right? There's a new zero-day vulnerability that comes out. An organization provides a patch. Everyone feels safe, or a new tool comes out. We purchase it. We implement it. But then that can result in tool sprawl, right? Just too many tools for us to manage, too much noise for our security teams to keep up with. And that challenge comes down to just being able to effectively manage the program itself and also having the appropriate skill sets in-house that enable us to do those things. So we've gone from, okay, we need to add all the things and all the tools to, okay, now they're making too much noise and we need to be a lot more efficient about things. So those are some of the challenges I'm seeing.
Absolutely. Excellent. And Mark, over to you now. Why aren't companies aligning their finite security resources to protect what matters most? And feel free to build on anything that Tia shared as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think one of the biggest challenges the companies face is the communications gap between the technical experts. So those that understand what the threats look like, right, or at least at the 50,000 foot view, and then the business leaders who, of course, who don't, right? And in fact, a lot of times it's the business leaders that get in the way, right? That don't understand the threats or they labor under misconceptions, right? This notion of, you know, we're not the type of business that criminals target, right? We're not a bank or a big pipeline or the government or something along those lines, or we're too small, or, you know, we're in the Midwest and how would someone in Russia or China even know we exist? And you know, the problem is when the technical leaders with that acumen can't articulate the threat and map it to specific business risks that would then justify some kind of investment from the business, you kind of get this breakdown in communication, right? And it's like we still, to some degree, lack the sort of the Rosetta Stone, right, that helps us helps us translate, because that's sort of the first step, right? Now that we know there's a problem, now we can start to build a plan to fix that problem. But, you know, that's going to take funding and resources. And like Tia said, right, you've got tech sprawl and tools and technologies. And, you know, and I see this particularly, and I call them proprietor-owned businesses, right? And that can be things like business services, like accounting or legal. But even in healthcare practices where, you know, they're kind of doctor-driven, or in manufacturing where it's, you know, the clever engineer came up with the new, you know, more round tire. And, you know, unfortunately, they sort of translate that expertise and success into every facet of technology, which, of course, you know, it's simply doesn't, right? And that's where I think Tia's work and, you know, the sort of the framework she's creating and the way the approach that she takes to it helps bond both sides of the party, right? That helps to look at the sprawl. Are you using these things efficiently? What's the best approach? You know, you've invested all this stuff. Are you actually protecting what matters, or do you still have these, you know, significant gaps that unfortunately, you know, bad guys are going to use to get in, like she said, right? We have to get it right all the time. They have to get it right once. You know, and once they're in, you know, we might see the kind of outcome that, you know, is the thing that keeps them up at night, right? Like a massive outage that becomes public.
Right. And Tia, from your perspective, what is the biggest hurdle to moving to a risk-based approach to security? I mean, obviously, we just talked about budgets and funding and all that, but I'd love to hear more from you.
Yeah, I think that it's funny because the biggest hurdle really goes all the way back to basics and making sure organizations are aligned in the way they define risk in the first place, and the organizational approach to managing risk. And this is a lot of what I do in the work with the Cyber Risk Advisory Program at East Entire, because, you know, security professionals, when we go through education, we get certifications and we learn about risk, it's all about calculating risk based on the a lot of times based on the financial value tied to these assets. And that's how we prioritize. But that can leave gaps. But the reason we're kind of stuck doing it that way, to Mark's earlier point, is because we have to translate the bits and bytes of the technology and what we're putting in the environment and the teams that we're building to support those technologies into the dollars and cents, you know, that is then speaking the language of the leaders that we have to translate this information to. So when I say going back to basics, it's okay, as an organization, what do we define as risk and how are we going to manage that risk? And what I find is a lot of organizations are taking a maturity-based approach, which means, hey, the more mature we are in this area or that area, or the more mature we are with this specific capability, then the better off our program is. And then another approach is compliance-based. As long as we're compliant, then we should be okay, right, from a cyber risk perspective. And the reality is the risk-based approach, the maturity-based approach, the compliance-based approach all have a place in an overarching cybersecurity program. But when it comes to the reduction of risk, the very definition of that is choosing a cost-effective way to implement the tools and controls that are going to allow you to reduce risk over time. So adhering to compliance and maturing capabilities don't necessarily translate into reducing risk. So the challenge is, at a higher level, just to bring it all back together, aligning to frameworks that do not produce the appropriate outcomes, which is reducing risk over time, and figuring out what it looks like and what information is necessary to pull together. Is it my vulnerabilities? Is it the attacks that I need to be worried about? Is it my critical assets? And the reality is, it's a combination of all those things, right? And the likelihood of those occurrences that will help organizations prioritize where they need to focus their spend, where they need to increase, you know, resources, whether it's financial or people, what have you, to then, you know, have the outcome be reducing risk over time. So choosing the proper framework, first of all, and approach to program management is the biggest thing. And I find that's where a lot of organizations fall short.
That makes a lot of sense. And so really nicely ties into my next question, which is for you, Mark, on how can organizations identify their priorities and align those security efforts? I think that's a nice build on what Tia just shared.
Yeah, absolutely. And it does based on what she's just said, which is establishing, you know, a risk assessment, like conducting that and determining those factors, right? Is it my vulnerabilities? Is it the threats I face? Is it the industry in which we participate? Are there regulatory guardrails that we have to adhere to? Those kind of things. And creating that prioritized list of risks. And that can be done, you know, based on things like tolerances and appetites. And once you do that, right, that's kind of like, okay, now we know what it is we're trying to achieve. And you know, at that point, we start mapping with our experts. Okay, so what are the right strategies, or the right tools, or experts, or other resources, and so on, to do that? Because she's 100% right, right? It's like the old definition of insanity, right? Repeating the same action and expecting a different outcome. And we see this time and time again, right? If all these frameworks were so great, then we shouldn't expect that, you know, ransomware and these type of cyber attacks are now effectively, you know, the comedy fodder of late night comedians. And it is now, right? So there is something broken. And I heard an expression that's often used between, you know, sort of adversaries or groups that are trying to work together and really haven't found harmony, is this negotiating a place of modus vivendi, right? Which is like a way of life. And it's almost like saying, yeah, we're going to agree to disagree on certain things, but I'm going to respect the fact you're an expert in this place. And I will, you know, and we will do, you know, reciprocate and do the same thing to try and come together. Because right now, I don't know that all groups are. And ultimately, that's got to lead to some kind of way of, you know, measurement, right? And in, you know, in training, and I remember doing this way back, and I'm actually starting to apply it with some, you know, security awareness now, is there's this notion of Kirkpatrick's model, right? Which is this idea of, you know, multiple levels of measurement. And, you know, at the bottom is, you know, your whatever, your smiley sheet, or your, you know, your simple test. And of course, what we often see is, you know, in academic circles as well, right, that the results you see there don't necessarily correlate to business outcomes. And so, you know, you have to sort of drive towards that. I think one of the best ways just to start this conversation, you know, is to run a security awareness session with the executives, help them start to see, you know, at the very high level, what are some of the risks? What are some of the threats? And that as you go through that activity, you know, if you sort of do like a mock tabletop or a simulation exercise of a breach, like take a Colonial Pipeline and model that, right? It's pretty simple. When you do that, they start to realize there's a bunch of decisions in there that get made that aren't technical decisions, right, that are business ones. Well, are we going to disable this type of service? That will have an effect which will be, you know, publicly identified, right? And, you know, that's going to affect our customer base, for example, or maybe we're obligated to report that. So now there's these knock-on secondary business effects that they have to manage, right? And that really all has to come into the factor. Or, I mean, really the best way, right, is, you know, engage TIA or engage your team. And because, you know, that's their job and that's their expertise, is to come in. They've seen this 100 times, if not, you know, thousands of times. They know what it looks like. And while every company, you know, may feel like they're unique in their, you know, their position, they are. But, you know, there's an awful lot of overlap with every other company, right? And other companies in the industry, and, you know, other companies maybe have solved it. And she also does, I think, a great job of taking some of these, you know, I call them big company practices, right? How do large companies do this at a very mature level, and pull that down and make it sort of digestible for smaller to mid-sized firms that, you know, don't have the same financial wherewithal.
Right. And so, speaking of expertise, Tia, what do you think the difference is between risk tolerance and risk appetite, and how does that drive those security initiatives for companies?
That question does tie in really well to what Mark was just saying. The reality that there are a lot of business decisions to be made before we can even get to a point where we're making the technical decisions. So both the risk appetite and risk tolerance are those business decisions. But the difference between the two is the risk appetite is more at the macro level. So that's, I mean, if we go right to the NIST definition, it's the types and amount of risk really on a broad level that an organization is willing to accept in pursuit of, you know, driving value in their organization. So the risk appetite becomes the framework for how we're going to approach, you know, management of risk in general. And then your risk tolerance is more at the micro level. So that's on a per risk basis. So how much or what is the maximum amount of risk that we are willing to accept associated with this specific risk that we've identified? So then the combination of the two, to answer your question around how that drives initiatives, the combination of the two becomes the company's risk posture. So that basically defines the company's overall approach to risk management. That becomes the baseline for your security teams and your technical teams to say, okay, We've identified these risks. We've looked at the vulnerabilities associated with the critical assets in our environment. We've done some research. We figured out, you know, the top techniques, tactics, procedures that adversaries may take in order to compromise the organization and how we want to combat those. And then you make your decisions around prioritization. But again, at the foundation of all of that is the business decision, how much of this in general and how much at each risk level are we willing to accept? And my team and I do a lot of that, right? We just sit down and we just, you know, I tell organizations all the time, let's just break open the book. It doesn't have to be specific to eSentire because we're an input into your overall approach to cybersecurity program management or risk management specifically, but we need all those inputs. You can't really break off one specific portion of it and say, okay, hey, let's talk about this and then try to take it back and bolt it into your overall strategy. It does need to be attacked at the strategic level. You want to pull in all things and then work yourself down to how you want to identify your priorities and then identify your priorities and attack them accordingly.
Excellent. Absolutely. Quickly before final question, Mark, anything to add there?
No, I think Tia nailed it, right? Which is, this is the problem, is I think too many companies look at cybersecurity as a toolbox, right? And, you know, it's the old adage, right? I don't want a 3/8 drill bit. I want a 3/8 hole. Or, you know, frankly, I want to hang a picture, right? That's what I'm really trying to achieve. And I think that's an issue that we see, right? Is suddenly something springs to the top, like an exec reads an article that says, oh, you know, if we only had multi-factor authentication, all these ransomware attacks wouldn't have happened, or they would have been stalled or more detectable or whatever. And so they suddenly jump on, well, you know, we need that, right? And as Tia said, it's like, okay, well, maybe you're plugging this one hole over here by doing that. And yes, I'm never going to say you shouldn't be using MFA because you should always be using it. But, you know, have you really solved the problem? You know, where have you left another gap? And like anything, we have finite resources. So what got sacrificed to make that decision, right? Again, not trying to imply MFA is a bad idea. You know, pick any other example as well. It's just, you know, at the end of the day, like, what's your objective and have you mapped to it? And can you determine whether you've actually achieved that goal? I think that's the biggest thing. Because otherwise what happens, right, is you deploy some piece of technology, maybe it doesn't get used properly, or it doesn't get used to its full extent, or you don't have the expertise in-house that knows how to use it. So think like logging, for example, right? All these fantastic alerts and events get kicked out. But if you don't know what to do with that, right, it doesn't matter, right? You've just sort of kicked the can a little farther down the road, but you never really protect your business. And that's ultimately what you need to do.
Absolutely. So finally, Tia, to wrap up our conversation, as we invest in a risk-based approach to security, how do we know it's working? Probably the question you hear all the time.
Absolutely. And this is where we add a ton of value to the organizations that we work with, because KPIs and metrics are huge here. And that's another challenge with moving to more of a risk-based approach, is it's difficult to establish a standardized framework for how to measure, because organizations are going to have different priorities and different concerns that bubble up to the top of their list over others as you go from company to company or industry to industry. But I will say a lot of my research is showing that boards are becoming increasingly interested in the effectiveness of their cybersecurity programs. And notably, because of all the disclosure of public breaches lately, you know, I can imagine just like, well, how safe are we? And that used to be the question, are we safe? And okay, we're not in the paper, we must be okay. But now that's really coming down to boards adding cybersecurity expertise. And the question they want answered is more and more becoming, how are we reducing risk over time? So what we help organizations do is figure out what that measure looks like. Is that going to be like in it? I'm sorry, to back up a bit, it depends on really where you are in the maturity of your overall program, because are we looking to measure how well we are identifying and closing the gaps on the vulnerabilities in our environment? Are we looking at how much better our users are becoming in terms of recognizing phishing emails? It really does come down to what the focus of the organization is. But you have to establish KPIs and you have to establish metrics that are going to allow you to demonstrate, you know, how well you're doing or how well you're not doing, where you need to improve in terms of the KPIs that you then want to take back to the board or to your leadership to articulate the overall effectiveness of the program. So my point there being, if you can't measure it, if you haven't identified what you're going to measure, how you're going to measure it, and what improvement looks like, then you really won't know how well it's working. So it's critical to establish those KPIs and metrics while you're building the program.
That makes a lot of sense. Well, Mark, Tia, I feel like we've really holistically dove into this and broken this subject apart. And I think our listeners will really enjoy. So thank you both so much for joining.
You're very welcome. And again, thanks, Tia, for joining us. I know, given what we just talked about, you're extremely, extremely busy. So yeah, keep up the good work. And thanks for helping us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you. I'm Hillary McClure, Multimedia Director at Cybercrime Magazine. The Managing Cyber Risk podcast series is brought to you by eSentire, the authority in managed detection and response. eSentire's mission is to hunt, investigate, and stop cyber threats before they become business-disrupting events. Combining cutting-edge machine learning XDR platform technology, 24/7 threat hunting, and proven security operations leadership, eSentire mitigates business risk and enables security at scale for over 1,000 organizations globally. To learn more about our sponsor, visit eSentire.com.